Okay, and welcome to a session about developing Azure Functions. My name is Jeremy Thake. I'm the Senior Product Marketing Manager who looks after Azure Functions. And Chris?
I'm Chris Anderson, one of the program managers behind Azure Functions.
Excellent. So today we're going to talk about Azure Functions, give you a good introduction of what functions are and what serverless actually means, and actually start to show you how you can get started inside the Azure portal. But then we're going to dig a bit deeper into some actual scenarios, and Chris will show you how easy it is to get started with Azure Functions and get going as a developer with both C# skills and also other programming language skills as well.
Yeah.
So Chris, like, maybe you want to introduce Azure Functions quickly?
Sure. So Azure Functions is all about serverless event-based processing, really focusing on making so it's really quick to develop what you need to do and helping to abstract away some of the services you end up talking to as well. So that kind of touches the three different things that we have on this particular slide, where essentially Azure Functions, by being serverless, allows us to scale rapidly and dynamically behind the scenes for you, and you only pay for what you end up using. So if your function never runs, you'll never pay anything. And if it runs a lot, you'll only end up paying for the particular things you do, never for peak scale or anything along those lines. And then we take a similar kind of approach with languages. We want you to just kind of get in there and start working with your code as quickly as possible. So we have support for scripting languages like Node.js, PowerShell, things along those lines. But we also have support for, inside of our portal, editing things like C# and F#, which are compiled languages. We use C# script and F# script behind the scenes to work with those things. But when you don't want to work inside of the portal, you can also work locally. And we'll talk a bit about how that works, how you can kind of essentially run our full runtime locally on your machine. It's not an emulator, it's the actual runtime that is running on Azure. We also have lots of different bindings into various services, and we'll kind of get into what that means. But generally, what we're trying to do is make it as easy as possible to work with the various Azure services that you rely on to do your job.
So as a developer, what types of things would you map to Azure Functions? Like, if I'm a developer that's been in the business for a long time, suddenly this new construct comes along. Why is this beneficial to us as a developer, even in Azure, or maybe you're not in the cloud yet and you're on premises? What kind of things would you see this as a value, kind of a snap to of tasks you currently do as a developer and pulling those things out?
Well, this is really building on the exact same kinds of scenarios that WebJobs was really good at. But it really expanded itself in one major way, which was the addition of HTTP support. So now we can go ahead and have a function run in reaction to like a web request or a webhook. The kinds of scenarios you end up seeing for this, generally people kind of get into it first with like a scheduled task. They've got something that they're running on their local machine or off on a VM somewhere, and they just want to go ahead and have it run on a scheduled basis. Or they've got some kind of queue processing thing that they're doing, and they just want to be able to handle that queue processing. It happens like once or twice a day. You don't want to have a VM up for it all the time. They move on to it from there. Then you kind of start to see how easy it is to actually work with and how reliable it is to actually kind of happen on and off, and you start to kind of throw more scale behind it. So that's where you start to see bigger scenarios like doing actual like image processing or order processing via queues or blobs. And we've also seen a lot of people end up doing really, really high throughput using event hubs and IoT hubs.
And we hear this word serverless a lot. What's your kind of best way of explaining that? I know you've got a good slide that kind of illustrates that. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and how developers can map to that and understand that in a way that makes sense?
Sure, yeah. I mean, serverless, you know, oftentimes people deride it because, of course, there's clearly servers behind the scenes. But essentially, what it really is talking about is that you've got an abstraction of the servers that you're actually trying to work with. And, of course, other things have been like this, right? PaaS today with things like App Service is already helping to abstract away some of the server concepts, but there you're still responsible for some of the aspects of scale. And the great thing that serverless does is take it the extra mile and really focus on just the function execution, not so much the actual environment the function itself is going to be executing in. It also comes with, you know, two other kinds of side effects from that particular model. You've got event-driven scale, because since we don't know when your function should be run and when it shouldn't be run, we have to have some kind of event to run it based off of. And because you're only running your function when there's actually an event to be done, we can actually do sub-second billing. So that means that if your function runs for less than a second, you will only get billed in, you know, milliseconds.
So this is a very good thing for people that, again, are using those scenarios, either like timer jobs or events that spring up, do some code, and then go down again, without necessarily having to pay for like humongous VMs that are running and paying for them when they're cold. You're already getting charged for whatever you're using it for at that time, place.
And frankly, it's great if you just don't want to think about it, right? Yeah. There's a lot of scenarios out there where you could get better, you know, kind of value for your dollar by, you know, buying a server and running a server under high utilization. But a lot of the times you are trying to think about that kind of end scenario of like what that's going to work like. functions just kind of work. They scale, they go, and they're still, you know, very, very affordable.
Right, and so you mentioned the word PaaS as well, which kind of links to serverless.
Yeah.
As in like platforms as a service.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the real benefit is that you really are abstracting away all that knowledge of having to maintain the underlying hardware or virtual machines that are running these particular bits of code, but also then the operating system, any patching you're doing at that level too. So I think that gives lots of benefits where the developers really only have to care about the functions they're writing. And I think hopefully by the end of this session, you'll understand that, you know, really what Chris will show is that you're focused on the 10 lines of code which do the actual work of the function and not all the other maintenance jobs and DevOps aspects and kind of operational aspects you have to worry about as a developer.
Yeah, I mean, really what you get down to is when you look at the benefits of serverless, what it's all about, what we're all about and our mission as the people kind of develop the product is making sure that you can ship your product faster. We want you to be really focused on the actual business problems that you're trying to solve, not trying to create new technical or infrastructure problems to go solve. That also then leads to kind of, you know, reduced operational costs. There's always going to be ops with any kind of service. You always have to be making sure that the thing is still behaving correctly. Maybe you have something upstream that changed, who knows. But our goal here is that you don't need to like decide when do I need to scale out. Is there some kind of increased load here that I need to go and deal with? We want you to only think about just, is it performing the application or logic we're supposed to be doing? And then, of course, all comes down to just focusing in what you're actually supposed to be writing, not focusing too much on all the various other things that are kind of out there.
Yeah, and I think some of the key things you'll see is that, you know, Azure Functions allows you to integrate into other business systems very, very easily. When you're connecting into other third-party systems, often you have to write all that connector code, whereas we've got these bindings that makes it super easy. So maybe we can kind of get into and show some of this stuff in a bit too.
Yeah, let's definitely do that. So what we're going to do here is we're just going to jump out to the portal. And what I wanted to quickly show you here is just how easy it is to create a function app, right? So we're just going to go through here and quickly create one. I'm just going to choose this, you know, relatively random name here.
And for those that are familiar with the Azure portal, this portal blade aspect of creating a new kind of service within Azure Function or the Azure portal is really similar.
Yeah.
So some of these things might be kind of green to people that have not used resource groups and so forth before, but really that's just a way of kind of containing different services in Azure together.
Yeah, it's really nice. You know, Azure makes really heavy use of trying to combine lots of different managed services and things like that together. So in this case, we have all that bundled together in a single resource group. It makes for very repeatable deployments and very kind of sane management right. of all your different resources. You're not trying to remember, is this function related to this thing or this thing? It's all managed in a nice resource group for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's also if you're cleaning up after when you're already playing with these things, it's nice. You can delete the resource group and it'll kind of get rid of everything that's related to it as well.
Yeah. So one thing I'd like to go ahead and talk about here is this hosting plane here. So this is where you kind of get into the one big decision you have to make. So we've been talking a lot about serverless, and that ends up being what the consumption plan means. You're going to be paying as you go kind of thing.
Yeah.
The app service plan, you can actually run on what a lot of people who are familiar with Azure know as the app service plan for like web apps and mobile apps. You can run on those exact same app service plans, functions, and only pay for the instance count. And that also helps you kind of limit the scale too. If you're worried about the thing actually scaling out, you know, a crazy amount, you're not too sure about the serverless thing, or you just need like a reliable bill to send on to your boss because he doesn't like the idea of, you know, not knowing what you're actually going to pay ahead of time, you can very easily go with the app service plan. And there's a lot of cool things that you get there, like you can get more memory per function, a lot of different things.
And if you're already paying for an app service plan, maybe you're already hosting a website, you can then associate this function app with that existing app service plan?
Absolutely. So like, let's say I've got a web app that already exists, and I just want to have like a timed update, which is going to clean a database that website's reliant on. Like, I want to go clean up a bunch of old records from there. I can very easily add a function app to that existing app service plan, add that time job in there to clean up that database, and it's a no additional cost. It's just going to go ahead and work with the existing compute my web app is already using. The only thing to be concerned with there is if you want to do any heavy processing on that side of that same app service plan, you will be competing for resources with your website.
Right. And then depending on which app service plan you go with, whether it's kind of standard or premium, depending on how many instances you've allocated to it, will depend on the scale of how many functions can grow out, I'm guessing.
Exactly. So essentially, you can kind of think of as it's, you then have to think about scale units, right? So each function app will do a certain amount of work, and each new instance that you add will essentially add a new scale unit to what you're trying to do. And so you can kind of incrementally, linearly scale out what your application does. The only thing to keep in mind here is that function apps will only really have their full functionality inside of basic, standard, and premium, because we require always on to be turned on for a lot of the features like timer and queue processing to work.
Okay.
But if you just want to do HTTP, it does work inside of free and shared. And
okay.
if as long as you're in the portal, the other ones also continue to work. It's just that eventually your function app will fall asleep in those other tiers.
And there's some great documentation we've got out there to explain the differences between those plans. But yes. It's the first kind of question you get asked in this, and so it's important we bring that up in this demo.
Yeah.
So what else do you have to do to get a function app on running?
So essentially from there, I'm going to go ahead and choose a consumption plan. There's this memory slider here that actually isn't going to matter anymore here. Very soon, this will actually disappear from our portal. You can read our great blog about how that actually is going to work. And then the other major thing here is that we rely upon a storage account to help maintain a lot of the state that the function app ends up using.
Okay.
So from here, we can go ahead and click on create, and this is really just going to take us, it takes all of 30 seconds to a minute, depending on how fast the underlying stuff actually takes to provision. So very, very little amount of time to actually provision this resource at all. But just for the sake of kind of demo magic, I'm just going to jump off to this one that I already have kind of started here.
Okay. And so this is the experience you get straight out of the box when you first create a new function app.
Yeah. And so what you would normally see when you have an empty function app is you'll see this quick start page, which you can always access again after you've done it via this quick start link down at the bottom left. Inside of here, you can see that you've got kind of these three options. And these are kind of our three pillar scenarios, we think. You've got timer-based jobs, data processing jobs using queues, and webhook and API, so HTTP triggered functions. So in this case, I always like doing the HTTP triggered functions for my Hello World, and we can always choose between C# and JavaScript.
So if someone wanted to do a different language, like you mentioned PowerShell earlier on, what would be the flow for them?
So if you wanted to look at some of our other languages that we have that are still in preview right now, but will become GA a little bit later on, you can always go to new function and just look underneath that language's type. And then choose the different flavor of that language you have. We have templates for all of our different triggers.
Sure.
So in this case, most of my demo today is going to end up being C#. We'll be doing a bit more JavaScript, but I just want to show one JavaScript function real quick. So I'll go ahead and create this function. And you can see that we have this great tour here. So I can click on next to learn about how to develop my function. I can learn how to integrate things. This is where I set up new bindings, input bindings, triggers, et cetera. So if you ever hear or see any of our demos talking about adding bindings, this is the page that you're generally on. It's just accessible under integrate over here. And then you also have your function app settings. And this is where we have a lot of kind of the collection of function-wide settings. So you can get onto your underlying app service blade, you can access Kudu, you can access a lot of different features that we have because we're built on top of the app service platform. But then finally, just talks about some next steps. We have some links to our documentation, gives you some ideas for what you can do from here on.
Great.
And then we just have a function. Now the interesting thing here is that since it's an HTTP function, we already have an endpoint for it that's built off of that function app name that we already have. So you can see here that my function app was named Strande Demo 11. And we are just accessing this azurewebsites.net. And so it's already available for me on the internet. And I'm just using this API key to really quickly get access to it without making it public.
Okay.
And then so here, the nice thing is this is live. So I can go through here and I can just, add some exclamation marks, go ahead and go back to this thing. And I'm just gonna go ahead and add name equals world to my the end of my string here. And you can see here that we get hello world back as our response. And it already has those exclamation marks. There's no deployments end up happening here. I can then go through and remove those exclamation marks because I'm not actually that excited, which is silly because functions are amazing. But here I get hello world with no exclamation marks in this case. So it's really just that simple to go ahead and start creating an API. In this case I'm returning just a simple string, but if we wanted to, we could actually go ahead and just drop this inside of just a very simple object here and make that a message and then just close out our JSON body here. And now we're going to be sending a JSON body as our response. And we can go ahead and refresh this one more time and we get a actual JSON message as our response.
And you're using Control S shortcut keys when you're in the editor to save the function as you're alt-tabbing for.
Yeah, like you can see here that I'm hitting space here and I'm just hitting Control S behind the scenes, but I could also go ahead and hit save or save and run even. So if I want to just avoid the two button clicks that it takes to go save and then hit run. We've got a shortcut there for saving and running.
And
you
see
that we can run it from the portal.
See in the bottom there in your console, you've got this notion of logs there, so you can actually report in and see what's going on directly from that interface. So every time you hit that in the other browser window, you're getting a log through of those calls.
Yeah, and the thing is these are streaming to our underlying file system as well as to our actual table storage-based monitoring system. So you can always go ahead and look at like a failed executions call afterwards. And the nice thing here is that it's very easy to just log new things out here. Like let's say I want to go look at the new version that I'm using underneath the covers. I can just hit this. And now I'll go ahead and have those things logged out for me every single time that I call this. And you can see that we're running on node version 6.5.0.
Right, okay, cool. That's awesome. And then from here, I guess the first question I'd reach to is that, okay, so you hit that URL just in your browser. And naturally, if I was on my laptop right now and quickly managed to write that URL down, I could execute that too.
Yeah.
How can you lock those things down for enterprise developers that are watching this?
So the other really important thing that we have is the ability to take advantage of App Services authentication features that they've got built in. So if you go to your Function App settings and you go here to your Manage options to configure authentication, you can see here that we have the ability to go ahead and hook up a number of different authentication providers just immediately to the front end of our Function App. So in this case, I could actually configure Active Directory. And the nice thing about Active Directory is since it's built into Azure, we can choose this express configuration. It'll create a new app for us without having to do any additional clicks. I can choose an existing app. I can create a more advanced application. But I can also just really quickly throw this in front of our AED tenant.
So for instance, if my organization's on Office 365 already, essentially you could use that to then force that they have to log in with their organizational credentials to actually access that function.
Exactly. And if they're already logged in, they'll just get one notice to say, hey, you need to approve that you're okay to use this app, this application's okay to use your identity. But you can see here that now that I've done that, if I actually go through and grab this URL that I have back here, and just take a sec. And then I can actually go ahead and upload a new in private window here. And you see there that it actually will prompt me to go ahead and sign in with my account now. Whereas if I go through here and then turn off that same authentication that I had, I can actually go ahead and do that, hit save. And if I go back to this page and I try to hit that same URL, it'll no longer force me to log in because I've disabled authentication.
Excellent.
And so now I've got my app function apps protected with AED with only like, you know, two clicks inside the portal.
And so I also noticed inside that the settings pane there, you've got things like app settings. So is that really where I do like environmental settings that maybe locally I'm running the function with certain config settings and maybe in the live staging or production? I would have different settings as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So these are your app settings. And you know, for ASP.NET developers, this is, you know, a very common way of thinking about kind of your different settings that you have for your application. But for anyone who's doing Node, you can think of these as just your environment variables, where these are things that you can access via process.env or in, you know, .NET Configuration Manager.
Great. OK, that's excellent.
And the nice thing there is that means that I don't have to check in, and I should not check in any of my actual secrets here. So these things here, this actually contains my storage account connection strings. I can have, you know, connections to Service Bus or Event Hubs. All those things are listed here. And that means I can have my code and even a publicly facing GitHub. And by just having my ARM template set up correctly when I do the deployment to set those app settings, I never have to have any secrets checked into my repo.
Right. And so, I mean, as a Node developer, I look at this and go, well, I don't really want one file for my entire function. So can we reuse libraries that are out there on NPM or... How would we do that as a Node developer?
Yeah, so I mean, the thing is that underneath the covers, this whole site is just a series of folders that then get loaded into our functions runtime. So it's very easy to just open up a console here. And after just a brief load time, you can see that I can actually read through all of the different, you can actually see there that I've got folders there for each of my various functions. So if I go ahead and look inside of items, you can see that I've got a item.csx, a run.csx, a function.json. Let's say we want to go ahead and load in a very common Node library. Instead of having to actually go and upload a zip of that library or anything along those lines, we can just actually run npm install like Lodash. And then this will actually go ahead and install Lodash. And the nice thing is any function Node modules that are installed at the root of my function app can be shared by all the various functions that I have in there. And that helps to cut down on upload sizes and maintenance of things. Every single function can share those same Node modules. And you can also upload your own custom written shared libraries. And this applies for really .NET and Node, where you can upload any additional libraries or shared modules that you want to. You can even very easily write other files. You can see here that I have an item.csx file here, which actually just contains a very common model I want to use throughout this application that I have, and it's just a POCO object. And that's a very, very easy way of working with these various files without having to worry about, you know, a very complex project structure. They're just sitting there in folders. So this will go ahead and install for us without having to actually, you know, wait for it. So we can go ahead and just kind of move on to the next thing. And there's a lot of other things in here. I can set up cores. So if I want to let, if I want to build a spa application where I want to be able to go ahead and have my spa access my APIs that I built inside of functions, I can go ahead and enable different, you know, domains to actually access this my APIs. I can upload a Swagger metadata to describe what my application itself is doing, so that way I can work with logic apps and other similar applications. And we also have this really cool feature here, which is Go to App Service Editor. And this will actually upload a different, another option for editing code online, which, you know, in our model, we have this view, which is pure per function. Mm-hmm. And so I can still view files per function and view other things inside of here, but I'm still having to swap between functions to actually kind of see my context.
All right.
And the nice thing here is I can actually view it all as one large thing. So you can see here I've got my node modules folder, which might contain, you know, Lodash here if it's finished installing, which it has. I've got my various index.js file and things along those lines. And you can see here that I'm actually have like syntax highlighting. And we also have this really cool thing here where you've got Git. So if you want to, you can actually connect to Visual Studio Online or initialize a Git repository and work here directly with, like, you know, GitHub or Visual Studio Online to actually store my code in source control without actually having to work locally entirely. So I never have to actually install anything locally to edit functions with source control.
Wow, that's really nice. And so we've talked a little bit about binding. So this one is just an HTTP request we're calling from the browser. Can you show us an example of a binding that's very easy to set up through the integrate tab with a scenario here in the function app?
Sure. Yeah, so I already have this function here. It's using this lovely item.csx class. And essentially what I've got is this notion that I want to be able to send a post request, which contains a string with name and an int named count, right? And the cool thing that we'll end up doing for you here is if I end up going to my develop tab and I click on my run CSX folder again, you can see here that I've got my HTTP request message request argument here. And what this is doing for me is this is going ahead and grabbing the HTTP request that comes across from this being an HTTP trigger. We know it's an HTTP trigger because I've set this trigger to be HTTP, and the method itself is called rec. And that's how we know that those two things are linked together.
Okay, so the top part of that screen is really where you would select which kind of binding you want, and then the bottom part is just configuring whatever you've got selected there.
Exactly. And so you'll notice that one other thing that I have inside of here is this output binding, which is using Azure Queue Storage.
Right.
And that one's just named output. So when we go back, and it's notice that it's pointing at this item queue as the name of the queue name, and it's using the Azure Web Job Storage as its connection. So when I go to develop, you'll see here that I have this argument here that's iAsync collector item output. And essentially what this is expecting is for me to go ahead and put a collection, potentially, or maybe a single one, of items onto this async collector. And it's bound to that queue thing via that name output. They match one-to-one. And our runtime is smart enough to essentially reflect upon what your function signature looks like, and then go ahead and bind those arguments to the right things. And so now inside of my code, I'm then doing this part here where I'm doing await output.addAsync, and I'm just adding this data object. And I was able to strongly bind that data object to by reading the content of the request as item.
Okay, cool.
And you can now very simply see that I'm able to get that item object. I could do more error handling here if I wanted to make this a more robust API, but yeah. Obviously this is, you know, a bit of a demo. And then now I can go ahead and you'll see that I'm going to be able to respond with hello what that data name was afterwards. And, you know, the cool thing here is one thing that we didn't look at so far because we've been doing C++, or we've been doing JavaScript, is that we can actually, with C# compile here in the browser. So what I'm going to do is just kind of fix up that string because I had like the exclamation marks after hello. It looked kind of weird. So we're just going to go ahead and add that in the right place in the string. And I can go ahead and hit save. And you notice here inside of this thing that we actually do a compilation where it says compilation succeeded. If I end up doing something silly like forgetting a semicolon, anything along those lines, we'll actually go ahead and give you the exact error that happened there. And it's very simple then to go ahead and correct what your mistake was.
Sure.
And so the nice thing here is, like I said, we're going to go ahead and post something to this particular method. So I've got this one already set up here to point at this function. And it's going to send this Azure as the body, and I'm going to send count as 10. And so our goal here is to go ahead and upload a queue message with this exact same contents by posting to this particular endpoint. And so I hit send. And you'll see there that I end up getting a 401 unauthorized because maybe I gave it the wrong particular string. Just give it the right one. And now we get a 200 OK, and we get hello Azure back with the exclamation marks.
Okay.
And now the thing here is that this thing was going to head an outputting to this particular queue called items queue, pointing at the Azure Web Job Storage connection.
Because you had two bindings, it also responded back to the original request as well.
Yeah, because the key thing there is in the integrate tab, you also saw that we have this response object.
Right.
And the nice thing here is with HTTP and C Sharp, we're smart enough to notice that if you return a HTTP response task, we'll go ahead and use that asynchronously inside of the actual processing of the functions themselves.
Okay.
So.
And so from the queue perspective, where would I see that to see that thing popping onto the queue for developers that may be not familiar with that? What tools would you use as a...
So you can use the Azure Storage tooling to go ahead and figure out what's on that queue, even potentially add things onto that queue yourself. So
yeah.
They've got a really cool local tooling experience if you just look for the Azure Storage tool. And it's a really nice experience overall for actually kind of adding blobs or queues or looking through your table storage. The nice thing is since Azure Functions logs are all stored in table storage, you can also go look through your raw logs via table storage or run some kind of processing on your raw logs to do things like alerting and things along those lines.
And what if, functions can have a queue as a beginning trigger too.
Mm-hmm.
So you could daisy chain these so that the one function took that request and responded back with the exclamation mark message, dropped it in the queue, but then another function could pick that up, right? Is that
yeah.
kind of that way of kind of breaking down your functions into more discrete logic points?
And that's a great pattern, right? Azure Functions, we generally try to recommend that you do one thing, one business purpose in a particular okay. function. It's kind of like microservices in that way, where you want it to kind of really just focus on what it's supposed to do and let other things go ahead and handle the processing of things that can be split off into other background processing tasks.
Right, okay.
So in this case, this is just kind of an arbitrary thing where we're collecting items, then we're going to go do something with those items. We can easily write another function, which is a queue trigger, which goes ahead and does some processing on those items.
Okay. Now as a developer, like I'm seeing this and thinking this is great, but I'm not sure I want to spend my entire life inside the browser.
No?
So what... Because they change all the time too, right?
Like, yeah.
So what kind of things can a developer do to work locally on their machine, for instance, with Azure Functions?
Yeah, so the first place to kind of get started there is actually just going and installing our actual local CLI that we have available for Windows.
Okay.
So if you go ahead and run npm install -g azure-functions-cli, what you'll actually get there is locally on your machine a copy of our full runtime, including a kind of nice command line interface to start a local version of the functions host and interact with all your various Azure resources, including your function apps themselves, creating new function apps, downloading secrets from those function apps, et cetera.
Okay. And then what kind of things can you do? Like, does everything that I can do inside of the browser I can do locally? So for instance, I know you were like clicking on the bindings and so forth, but how does that work when you're working on this on the local host?
So when you're working on the local host, and we'll just jump off here to kind of Visual Studio real quick, what you end up seeing is the underlying kind of thing that comes back out of the integrate tab. So on that particular integrate tab that we were just looking at, if we go back to the portal, if we go over to this and we go to integrate, you'll notice that we have this advanced editor option right here.
Yeah.
You'll see that this actually just gives us JSON.
Oh, okay.
So the nice thing about that is that you can then check in your configuration. There's no kind of management calls you have to make after you deploy a function to actually hook up those triggers or those outputs. It's all just defined kind of as code, so to speak. So when I'm working with this locally, we don't end up having a fancy visual editor anymore. I have to work against the raw function.json.
Right.
We can see that it's a relatively kind of simple set of things here. We have what our type ends up being. So we have like a type Q or a type HTTP. You have this notion of directions, so which way is the data flowing in or out of that particular binding.
Yeah.
And you can kind of like set your connection thing to an actual app setting here. So if I knew my app setting was going to be named Azure Web Job Storage, I'd be able to set the name here, or I can change it to, foo or something along those lines.
Yeah, I found when I first started learning this, the best way to do it was to kind of do it in the UI and check what it's doing and then kind of grab that and move it back down to...
Yeah, and you'll see us kind of develop, better and better tooling locally here. So you'll, we have a schema that'll be coming out for this soon, so you'll be able to get, automatic JSON schema completion for a lot of these things. And hopefully we can have a lot more things and just make it that much quicker.
So I can see the CSX code directly in Visual Studio that you were authoring mm-hmm. in the browser straight down here. Can I run that function locally without having been connected as well?
Yeah, so I mean, as long as you're doing HTTP, you actually don't even need an internet connection. But as soon as you want to do anything with timers or storage or service bus, you need to actually have a connection out to the internet for those particular services. But assuming that I actually just want to run the code locally, but I want to talk to resources that are available in the cloud, I can actually just go ahead and do, you know, func run. In this case, I have a function named item, and I want to be able to go ahead and just run this. And what I'll actually do here is just get the actual command right. And you'll see here that this started up this process underneath the covers that returned to us, please send a name on the request body, because this is just kind of the message that I send to you if you look at the actual code that I have here. For when we don't detect that an item is available, when data is null, when that item that we got back was null, we're actually just going to go ahead and say, you know, hey, you didn't send us the right thing. We've sent you a bad request as the status code, and you know you need to send us an item.
Okay.
And so we can actually go ahead and we can you know, run this with you know, commands and all that kind of stuff locally here. So you can kind of, I can specify what the actual function is to run. There's a couple of additional commands we can do to actually put what the message is on as a part of this request. But the nice thing about this running locally is that we also have a API endpoint that we can hit. So I can go ahead and just click on this thing and, you know, send my, you know, set my message to Azure here, put my count, it's pointing at this item, and we've got this port here set to 7071. And so if I were to just access this in the browser here, just going off here real quickly, what we're going to get back is the please send an item on the request body, because we're just doing a get, and obviously we didn't put an item on the request body.
And will it always be 7071, or is that just...
It is configurable, but it'll be by default 7071.
Every time with this CLI, okay.
So if you end up having two hosts running side by side, we'll actually do 7071 and then 7072, and it just increments as long as there's not a port available.
Yep.
So now I can actually go ahead and just post that particular endpoint. So you can see here, the host itself just has these two calls that I've made to it so far, which were essentially failures because, well, not failures, but they were bad requests.
Right.
So let's go ahead and actually send a good request. And we're just going to go ahead and just post this name Azure thing to the item, to the API item endpoint. And you can see here that this one still had that old code here, which had exclamation marks in it. But essentially, you can see that we actually called it. This function was called programmatically via the host APIs. And then we had a bunch of queues that were then processed because we put this thing onto a queue, and we have another function, which is a queue trigger that's then processing those items.
Right, okay. And so we know we've pulled that bound to local now. What if I wanted to kind of commit this into some kind of source control, whether it be Visual Studio Team System or GitHub? What kind of integrations do we have if I'm working in a team and like I'm editing your code when you're not around because you've taken a beach holiday somewhere or whatever? How do I get that stuff integrated in? You showed it from the browser in the standard editor, but are there any more advanced ways to do this?
Yeah, so let's go ahead and like think about how can we take this to the next level. So let's say, you know, we just want to prove that this is actually going to do something. So I'm just going to add a nice little comment here that'll disappear afterwards. This will disappear. And you can see here that I'm going to go ahead and just swap between this function and this function. And our goal here is to actually go and redeploy code over this thing, proving that this is hooked up to kind of source control. And the other thing you'll notice that is that this function itself may disappear after we do this. So we want to make sure that when we do hook up an existing function up to source control, they're okay with anything that might be up there being overwritten or deleted entirely, because we're then hooking it to source control, and source control is the boss.
Right.
So if I then click on my function app settings, you notice that one of the options inside of here was deploy, and we've got this continuous integration ability here. And this is using the exact same deployment mechanisms that App Service itself is using under the covers. So I click on Setup, I click on my source, and then we've got all these various options, Visual Studio Team Services, GitHub, Bitbucket. We've got more kind of exotic things like OneDrive and Dropbox for uploading these things, which ends up being really useful if your team isn't using source control, but you still don't want to actually have to log into the portal every single time to upload your code. And you also have the ability to do local Git. And this allows you to actually create a Git Git server that's hosted on your function app itself, so you can just Git deployed straight to your function app from your local machine. You don't have to have any middlemen like GitHub or VSTS in the line.
Right.
In this case, I actually already have this particular project on GitHub, just underneath my personal name. I created a repository recently for function items demo, right? And so you can see here I've got my item, I've got my process item code right here available for me.
Yeah.
And so the cool thing is that I should be able to, now that I'm signed into GitHub, I already signed into GitHub, so it knows my identity. It's able to query GitHub itself.
Yep.
But if you didn't log in, it would just prompt you, like you said.
And so, you can do it against different branches and so forth as well, right?
Yeah, so here I can do function items demo, and you'll notice that the only branch I have to choose from is master, but if I had dev or, you know, feature foo, whatever I wanted to, I can have it, you know, hooked up to any of those branches. And the nice thing about this model is then I can have different function apps listening to different branches and have different environments for each of my different stages of my development. So I can have my master branch pointed at production, my dev branch, you know, pointed at staging potentially, and then I can have various, you know, dev focused feature branches.
And so the way to think about a function app is essentially that container of multiple functions, which is when you go and create your function app in the first place.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, once I've started that particular process, it'll kick off deployment for us. What this will do is it will immediately hook up a webhook to GitHub, and now every single time that I send a commit out to GitHub, it will go ahead and tell my function app that there's changes for it to go ahead and pull from, which is really nice. There's no me having to come in and log in. And of course, the first time I hook it up, it's going to go ahead and check if there's anything to go pull from. And in this case, I already have a commit ready for it. And so it's going to go ahead and pull down all the contents from that particular repository for me, and it will then, you know, load that over any existing content I might have had on my function app.
And then you're read-only in the browser, and the only way you can edit then is via committing into GitHub.
Yes, or by disconnecting the actual deployment after I've set it up.
Right, right.
We do have a feature request on our GitHub, feel free to upvote it, to actually allow you to kind of set, hey, I know what I'm doing, and then go tweak the code after you've in read-only mode.
Okay, I see. So it's done that now, and so if you go back to here,
One thing to remember is after I've done that, we probably want to go ahead and refresh.
Yeah.
And you notice that here I had a little kind of snafu because I had a folder on my thing called item.
Right,
and in this recreation that I had just done here, it was called items.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So now I have both here.
Right.
And so you'll see that we don't necessarily fully clean up the thing. It's one of the options you can set on your deployment rules is to go ahead and overwrite everything on that particular function app. But in this case, it will just go ahead and overwrite anything that already existed, but it won't delete anything that didn't previously exist. So that's one interesting thing about the, you know, adding an S to various things, you get duplicates. But now I can see that I have my item and I have my items.
Yeah, sure. Okay. And then so how should people get started? Like if they've got an Azure account, they can jump into the portal right now and go and create a new function app. Are there any options for people that don't have Azure accounts already?
So one really good thing that you can go ahead and try out is there's actually, if you go to functions.azure.com, you end up on our landing page for functions, and you'll notice that we have this thing here that's called Try It For Free. And what this will allow you to do is it will bring you to our Try Functions portal where you can choose one of our awesome Get Started experiences, choose a language. Right now we have C# and JavaScript here. If you want to use a different language inside of our Quick Start, you can, but you have to create a C# or JavaScript function first for now. And we're thinking about adding a little drop down there so you can choose PowerShell or F# if you'd like to. And I can go ahead and choose create this function, and then just choose one of these login providers.
Right.
And this will allow me to then go off and without a credit card, without any other information other than just signing in with those things, and we just use it to get your email. We don't use it for anything else. We let you go ahead and try out that function for, I think, like an hour or so.
Yep, yep, yep.
One other option for you is if you don't want to go through this experience, I mentioned that you can use our function CLI for HTTP scenarios without a storage account and doing it entirely offline.
Yep.
That means you can also do it without an Azure account in general. So if you just want to try out functions, you can do it entirely locally. All that kind of stuff can for HTTP-based functions can be done locally without an Azure account as well.
And just to clarify on the CLI aspect, that's only for now with Windows platforms, not with Mac platforms, right?
Yeah, right now the CLI itself is built against .NET 4.6, and once we move to supporting .NET Core, we'll be able to do cross-plat tooling.
So I'll be able to run it on my Mac.
Yeah, that's the goal there is to go ahead and support all platforms for tooling.
So where's the best way for me to keep in line with what's going on with Azure Functions? You mentioned a few times about voting things up and submitting requests. Where are you guys looking and homing in on with Azure Functions?
So one of the key places that we end up using is GitHub, because all of Functions, kind of core host code and our portal code is open sourced. And so if you actually go to github.com, you can just go to Azure and then Azure-Functions, and you'll end up at kind of our central repository. It doesn't actually contain any code. It just points at all the other repositories that we have for Azure Functions. And so you can see here that for like our runtime, you can go ahead and click on this, and you end up at Azure Web Jobs SDK script. And here you can go look through our code itself. If you wonder why something behaves the way it does, you can go ahead and look at our particular code. Like for instance, if I wanted to go ahead and look at how JavaScript worked, I can go into source, I can go to web Jobs script, go to description, and inside of here you see how Node itself works. And there's this, you know, whole thing here which describes how we actually invoke functions itself.
Right, okay, cool.
The other cool thing that you can do here is if you've got a request for how the host should behave or how the CLI should behave. You can actually go ahead and just submit an issue here. So for instance, if we want to see all the different things that are going on with CLI right now, we have a label for CLI, and you can see all the various things that we're currently doing with CLI right now.
That's great. That's awesome.
And one thing that we're going to be working towards is getting kind of, you know, very kind of predictable milestones, so you can kind of see features as they're rolling out and keep track with what we're doing in that space.
Excellent.
So, you know, one other thing that you might want to do when you're running things locally is, of course, just actually attaching a debugger to it. Because we're actually running the actual function host locally, that kind of puts the server back into serverless, right? Because now I have something to attach a debugger to and kind of work with in a logical way. So in that same way that we had func function run item, we can actually just do the dash dash debug statement for both C# and Node, and it will go ahead and attach a debugger for us. So in the Node case, which we're not going to show in this particular case, it'll drop in a launch.json file to my .vscode folder, and that will then allow me to do attached Azure functions from VS Code to Node. And then we have the full VS Code Node debugging capabilities. With C#, you'll actually see when I go ahead and do dash dash debug for attaching here, what ends up happening is that I then have this particular Visual Studio instance that I have hooked up. It'll prompt me for which one I want to attach to. In this case, it's already attached. But the really cool thing is now I can go ahead and set breakpoints inside of Visual Studio. And now if I go ahead and call back into this function, you'll see that we actually hit this breakpoint.
Wow, that's awesome.
And then now you can see that my data was null in this particular case because I just hit it via the command line experience. But the nice thing here is now that I'm attached, all the things that I would normally do to this function then just work. So if I go back to my postman and I go ahead and hit send, you'll see that I then hit the breakpoint there, and it's going to be null now because I, you know, haven't actually run this thing. But now I can see that data is actually equal to 10 and Azure is the actual type
right
there.
So no more are we logging values to some weird console app to debug these things when we can step into it like this.
Exactly, and now I have full control. I can step through my things. I can step into other methods that I might have. So if I've got a shared assembly that I've got with my actual, if I built my shared assembly with, you know, debug and the PDBs in the right place, we'll actually pick those things up and let you step into the shared libraries as well. So you really get the full debugging experience.
And that happens in both Visual Studio 2015 and also Visual Studio Code.
Yeah.
Great, that's awesome, thanks for that. And then when it comes to that kind of cadence, when will you be shipping on a, is it a weekly basis, or how will these updates go out?
We are planning on currently doing about a monthly cadence, probably likely starting that around January.
Mm-hmm.
And then that'll also include a lot of community activities. So we're hoping to go ahead and have some Q&A sessions, some opportunity for people to voice their opinions about what we should and shouldn't be focused on, and kind of a review of what our actual kind of sprint, if you will, for that particular month looks like.
Excellent. So I think kind of call to actions is, if you don't already have Azure, go sign up for a free account and try it for an hour. And if that's got you hooked, then sign up for an Azure trial and go a bit further with Azure Functions. Check out the documentation that's available on the documentation section of Azure.com. And also get engaged with the GitHub community. If you're already a GitHub user, you can go star that repo and get notifications as things comes through, and have a look at what issues are coming up and kind of add comments to help the engineering team with feedback if they have questions. Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time today, Chris. Thanks very much. And mm-hmm. If they've got further questions, where are the best places if they're just trying to get started and getting stuck?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're kind of everywhere. So if you have a question for how to use functions, you can ask on our MSDN forums or Stack Overflow. Our engineering team is actually very competitive, and they try to be the first ones to answer all the questions on there. They love their fake internet points. So you're not going to get just a question from me, the PM. Like, you'll actually get a response from our engineering team, the people who are working on it day to day. On Twitter, you can find me at CranityCodes, and I'm constantly just tweeting back. You know, I'm generally just cruising for the hashtag Azure Functions hashtag. Yep. And answering any questions or feedback that people have to offer there. You can go to feedback.azure.com, and we have a whole page there for you can respond there. And of course, GitHub, night and day, we're on there just working with people. We have people send us pull requests, and we just kind of work with them on those there. There's really no excuse not to reach out to us. If you've got any particular grievance or feedback or wish, we're there for you.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Chris. I appreciate your time. Mm-hmm. And thanks for listening, guys.